Just for a change, fancy hearing one that hasn't been released yet.
You're listening to Macaspam Radio.
Album is called London Town, and in the main it was recorded on a boat in the Virgin Islands. So I asked McCartney why this was done.
We were sitting in the studio in London, and it was raining and doing its usual thing at the beginning of, you know, February in London. It's kind of, oh dear, the sky's got that great grey it can get sometimes, you know. We were sitting in a little studio with no air or anything, about to do an album, you know, and the engineer we were working with, Jeff Emmerich, came back and he'd done an album in Hawaii with America, the Harbour album they did. And he'd come back and he said, we hired a house in Hawaii and we had the whole studio there. And he said, it was fantastic, and seeing all that. And everyone got jealous. We just said, well, it's all right for you, you know, we better do something like that. So we decided to see if we could get a studio on a boat, which everyone had been thinking about for a long time. So we rang up some people in LA who do that kind of thing, record plant, and they got it together, you know. They just said, yeah, we can do it if you're mad enough to want to try it. So we had like a month's holiday, and in the evenings, instead of going to the local hotel and having dinner like you sometimes do on holiday, we just would go to the studio, you know, and just spend time doing that. So it was like combining a holiday with that, but also it got us out of grey old London, you know. And we got a little holiday break, something, you know. It felt really good on the boat. I mean, you can't feel bad that way. You get a take and then you jump, just leap over the side to celebrate, you know, to all the blue water and that, and the sharks.
London Town. It's an evening with Paul McCartney on Capitol. More in just a moment. Our price
record. Most of the album with the lineup that was the one we went to America with Jimmy and Joe, but there's a couple of the tracks on it that we did after they left, like Backwards Traveller and Cufflink, where like I drummed, for instance, and a couple of tracks I played guitar on, which I mightn't have done if Jimmy had still been with us.
When I listen, I've listened to the album now twice, and your albums have got this, whenever you do something, it always tends to creep up on you. But the first time you hear it, you think...
Say that about Beatles songs, you know, they always used to say that, that we'd have a single out and people would be saying, oh, it's not much, is it? No, they haven't done it this time. And about a couple of weeks later, they'd be saying, oh, I love that new one of yours, you know. And I quite like them if they creep up on you, because it means there's a little bit more there than if they're just really blatant, you know, because some of the ones that hit you first time, when you come to listen to them a few times, there's nothing beyond that. That's all there is to them. So, you know, I don't mind as long as people actually end up liking it. I don't mind them creeping up at all.
But on the first couple of hearings, you do, or I at least got the impression, that the album is slightly more simplistic in terms of production than, say, Band on the Run or Speed of Sound. It's much less lavish.
It is a lot less lavish, because most of it is just sort of straight backing tracks where we've decided to not really put too many strings on stuff. You know, we could have put a lot of arrangements on stuff. But we've ended up doing it with guitars and doing it with synthesizers and stuff, rather than big string sections and stuff. And some of the tunes are a bit simpler than we've been doing. It just comes in phases, you know. At one moment, you've been listening to some records that are really produced and you think, oh yeah, I want to do that kind of thing. Another moment, you're listening to something that's very simple and you think, yeah, I really like very simple music. So we sort of come in the middle of that, probably, you know. It's not dead simple. There's a lot of stuff there in the mixes after a few times, and if you listen on headphones or on good equipment, there's all sorts of stuff appears after a few goes, you know.
But it seems that when the rest of the world, or at least it seems like the rest of the world, is going on to every sort of punkish new wave.
Yeah.
You have tended to go back to melody, to tunes, and it's simple, pleasant, easy to remember tunes.
Well, you know, I mean, you can't help what you are. You know, if I was 17 and starting off again, sure, it wouldn't be like that, you know, but I'm the kind of songwriter I am, you know, so when I sit down to do a song, you know, it seems to come out a certain way, you know, no matter what we do, really. There's a couple of tracks on there that are very different from how we've done it before, like the final track on the album, Morse Moose and the Grey Goose, is like a mad track for us. On the boat one night, that we were recording on in the Virgin Islands, and the electric piano that had an amazing little sound on it, so I was just clunking it, just for the fun of it, and the fella had the tape running, and just went like Morse code for about 5 or 6 minutes. Kept that, and then he kept kind of running over and sort of hitting the piano I was playing on. And we had this long thing that was nothing really, it was just Morse code going for 6 minutes. So we started just making up bits to go on it and overdubbing stuff, the rest of the stuff with the songs that we've written. You know, like the kind of, you're talking about melodies and sort of songy stuff. But that one was very different. We just made that up as we went along, you know. It's a kind of crazy track, that one.
Do you think that actually being on the boat in the Virgin Islands has given the tracks that you recorded there that sort of, that feel?
I can't really tell, you know, because they could just as well have been recorded in a studio. But being out there on the boat, I know, like, they were easier to record than they might have been in the studio, just because we all felt like playing, we all felt like recording. So something like Cafe on the Left Bank, which is the second track on the album, we just finished the studio, they'd just got it built, and we just kind of leapt in there and we're just trying it out. And with the kind of holiday feeling, you know, we got the track down very easily. And I think it's up to you to judge whether it's got any feeling of the boat on it. I was just sitting around and just this idea came to me about doing a song about groupies, you know, so it'd be like a nice idea to sort of send it up instead of getting all serious about them, you know. So it's just a joke track, really. There was one point where we were thinking it really could be a kind of real serious sort of shouted rocker, you know. Groupie! Really holler it and really get kind of mean on it. But every time we tried that, basically it's in the wrong key to do that with, because it's neither here nor there for singing it. So it came in a sort of medium key. So I ended up just goofing it and just being silly on the session and just trying to have a laugh, you know. So I had the tune back as Traveller, and originally I was trying to use that going into the song Name and Address. Name and Address is like an old-fashioned rocker, sort of after Elvis, you know, it's like people paint pictures after Lancia and after so-and-so. Well, that's kind of doing a thing based on the Elvis buzz for me. And I was trying to get this song, Backwards Traveller, to explain on the album why the album suddenly went to a kind of 50s type sound. And I was hoping to do Backwards Traveller and a Backwards Traveller and set it up, and then go backwards into time with some of these, a couple of the tracks sound like sort of 50s or 60s, you know, I've had enough sounds of it, sort of 60s to me. Yeah. And I was hoping to do that, but in the end we couldn't do it like that, it just didn't work, they didn't work in the right order. So it ended up a thing on its own, and I had a drum on that one, a drum on that track, which I liked doing, you know, and that was fluky really, because Joe had left, and he'd gone back to America to see his family and that. And we were stuck without a drummer, which is one of our recurring problems. So anyway, I always use that as an excuse. You know, that's the same thing happened on Band on the Run. I drummed on that in the end. So that ended up, we went into Cufflink, which was a jam. Hey, did you know that I... So that when it first came out, a lot of people went...
What is he doing?
What has he done? Well, I did that too, and so when I first heard it, you know, I thought, oh, well, it's a nice track in a bin, but can't be a single, really, because, you know, everybody's doing sort of, you know, like you were saying before, you know, really sort of rocking stuff and very basic stuff. How can you come out with a Scottish waltz? I mean, it sounds a bit maniac. But the Pipers, when we did it, they said, ah, it's got to be a single. Oh, grand, hey, well, the Exiles will love that, you know, and all of this. And I was saying, oh, yeah, well, we'll see. And then the people at our office were saying, oh, it's got to be a single. Do you get the accent change, though?
Not sure.
Came down south from me. And Just people kind of just said it's got to be a single. I ended up thinking, yeah, they're probably right. So, it was, you know, it worked out.
It wasn't perhaps his biggest success.
No, it wasn't anything of a success, Mulligan.
He played the other side.
See, at the time we thought, well, if we call it an A-side, then you're putting everything on Mulligan time. I wasn't sure, really, whether it was going to go down well at all, that one, you know, because a few people were saying they liked it, a lot of people were saying they liked it, but I still wasn't convinced, you know. So I thought, well, we'll make it a double A, and then if anyone wants, for any reason whatsoever, like to have a more up-tempo thing, they can use that one, but Mulligan Tire will surface as a single, which it did here, and in Australia and Germany and a few other countries where it got to be number one, sold very well in those countries, did well. But in America, they went totally on Girls School, which didn't do that much. And then they tried halfway through to flip the record over. And after Christmas, they tried to make Mulligan Tire noticed, you know. So just one of those things, it got swamped, you know, it never got noticed over there. I've got a sneaky feeling, though, that if we bring it out next year for Christmas in America, I don't know, you know, it's just one of those things. I keep meeting Americans and keep thinking, well, they're all kind of super soul freaks or something, but I keep meeting them, they say, hey, man, I hear you made a bagpipe record, you know, where is it? And we just haven't heard it, you know. So that doesn't help.
Three cheers to the girls.
Hip hip. Hip hip. Hip hip.
Single released from the new Wings album. Remember, the album's called London Town, and this is the single, With a Little Luck.
I used to get through a few personnel changes since the beginning of Wings.
Mm.
Whereas I think a lot of other people in your position might well have said, well, okay, we've been through a few personnel changes, you know, let's just do it on our own. What has it sort of kept you going in sort of continually looking for new drummers and, you know, other members of the band to actually keep Wings as a unit?
Well, once you've got the name, once you've sort of said you're going to do a group and you've got the name Wings and that, you just find yourself sort of looking for drummers and stuff, and obviously you want someone really good who turns you on. So we've been working with a couple of people who were very good for certain things, you know, but we weren't, it just always came to the crunch in the end, you know, where either we weren't really happy with what was going on, or they felt like, when in the last case of Joe, the drummer, he wanted to go back to America, you know, eventually the call of the hamburger was too much for him. So, you know, but I don't mind, really. I don't, it doesn't need to be too tight a thing for me these days. You know, I can just work with people and I don't mind. I can still call it Wings. So I suppose that's what's kept it going. Just I want some outlet for my songs, you know, and I end up doing it with the group. And there's Denny, me and Linda, who are still sort of original members. And we just work with whoever we think's good, you know. And maybe if we'll do a thing after this album and play live. It doesn't need to be something that goes for 20 years, you know. I don't mind a loose lineup that kind of breaks up after a few months. But as a kid and listening to records and stuff, it always disturbed me if groups kept breaking up and kept changing lineups. And I learned one drummer and then they change them, you know, like the Crickets, for instance. Buddy Holly, they were always changing, you know. And I always really just liked the first lineup. So ideally, you know, that's what I'm trying to do. But you can't always do exactly what you want to.
And there'll be more from Wings after the 10 o'clock news. Well, we continue our conversation with Mr. McCartney in just a minute.
We're down in sunny Twickenham at the moment, recording or rather dubbing a TV film. Can you tell us something about that?
Yeah, that was stuff that was done Wings Over America time when we did our world tour there, and we played in England and then we went to Australia and then America. And they shot film all along the way of us just sort of looming in and out of places and sort of backstage stuff. And they shot a lot of stuff on stage. So now at the moment we're getting all the sound right to the stage stuff. And then we're going to put it together with some documentary stuff for an American TV show. That's what it's originally for, you know, going to basically be for. And then we'll get it over here and put it worldwide, you know.
Yes.
It's just like a Wings Around the World kind of thing.
There's no sort of tentative date for it.
Not really. It should have been in February or being late as usual, and they're all screaming. So it'll be more like May, I think, in America. So that may mean it'll be at the end of the summer over here.
Finally, can I get back to the one track that we more or less discussed, but it's the rock and roll number, Name and Address.
Yeah.
It seems almost like a tribute to Elvis, the way that you sing.
Yeah, it is really. Yeah, it is, but funnily enough, it was done before he died. So it wasn't like meant as a tribute to him, but it was, I mean, when I was like, 16 or something, that was all I listened to really, was Elvis's early stuff, alongside with Buddy Holly, Carl Perkins, Chuck Berry, and Gene Vincent, and the rest of the lad, Jerry Lee Lewis, you know, the rest of the people then. But Elvis was always like one of my favourites, and I always used to do a kind of take-off of him. And I like singing like that, you know, it's just different style. So I did this one, it was, and all that, you know. And he went and died on me. It kind of was a bit weird then, because I realised people might be thinking, oh, he's done this because Elvis has died. It was originally just because I like that kind of sound myself, you know, I love the old tape. Was that like him? Was it? No, Freddie Starr does it better, but... it was just that kind of thing. It was like an affectionate tribute to him, but not meant as any big kind of heavy, Elvis is dead and, you know, this is the tribute. It wasn't one of them.
As for the new Wings album, London Town, that was Name and Address. Don't forget, in about half an hour's time, we'll be crossing over live to the Grosvenor House.
The last thing we did was kind of so sort of big time, you know, and tons of equipment and everything. But lately we've been talking about if we do some new stuff after the album, if we go back to doing some live stuff. We'd really like to try and get it down little funky places, you know. And the idea is to do something like a residency. But, you know, in the old days when you were really sort of young, struggling group, you get to have a lot of fun, actually, just by playing down little places, lunchtimes, where it's just kids from the office turn up, you know, and it's not a big, serious crowd, and you get to know them after about a week, you know, and they send up requests and stuff, and you can have a real nice, easy time. It's good for your music, it's good for your whole thing, really. So we'd either like to just play at certain small places around, say, London or any of the cities, really. In England, probably. And the other thought was to maybe try and get hold in London or somewhere, to get hold of like a great big warehouse, just nothing in it, and just take about 1,000-odd people, and just put a few tables and a few chairs and mainly a big dance floor and a stage. And just have a kind of evening gig when everyone's finished work kind of thing, you know, about 5 or 6. Just come along to this place, and it wouldn't be booze or anything, it would just be Coke and cheese rolls and stuff to keep it really simple, you know, because these things get complicated once you get booze in there, you know, and everything, got a license and all that. So just a really sort of simple little thing. We could turn up, and lots of new bands could turn up, you know, just kind of play, and people could turn up and jam with other bands. And the idea was to try and get like a really great house band. Imagine if you had like a great gig in London. Bands that had happened off, something like that would be great, because there'd be a lot of people who'd want to jam with the band. A lot of people who'd want to sing with them, a lot of vocalists knocking around. Then you'd find a lot of bands who'd want to come and just be noticed and play. So that kind of idea of kind of creating some kind of scene, you know, even if we take an already existing place and just play there for a week or two. So as you build up a scene, instead of just going one night, hitting the place, all happens one night, and you're out the next day. And it's like, what was that for? Kind of.
Do you think, though, that there'll be a lot of disappointed fans who won't be able to get in purely because the venue is relatively small?
Well, that's what we always say. Now, that's what everyone always says to us, is because you have a big audience, you have to play big places. But instead of playing one big place like Wembley for two nights, you could play a smaller place for more days and accommodate everyone over that time. And the big thing is, it would get much more of a buzz going, which for us, get much more of a buzz, I think, for the audience, because you'd be right there, you'd be talking to them real, you know. Which I always like, you know, I don't like to be 20 feet back.
You really miss that sort of contact.
I do, actually, yeah. I mean, it's not so much, I don't sit around weeping because I haven't got it. But given the choice of doing that or a big show right now, any day I'd choose that. Because, you know, we're not in it for making bread. I mean, you know, that's a... Obviously, no one's going to put that down, but for us, really, the thing is to enjoy playing our music to people. And if it's all very clinical and you're miles back and all the lights, you can't see a thing, you do get to kind of think, oh, God, I mean, it's easier being a small group, a struggling group, really, because you have more fun, although you've got more worries about money. So to kind of combine the two, the idea for us, you know.
An Evening with Paul McCartney, a Capital Radio production, copyright 1978.
To his boat, you know, and yeah, put some wood up on the back.
Hey, he started to sink, he started to panic.
I don't know why.
Yeah, the biggest technical problems we had was when he used to threaten to turn the generator off. You know, if he didn't get more money. He used to keep going on strike. He said, I'm turning this generator off. You're not having the power. So you have to keep going and talking to him. Please put the generator on. You know, we'd like to record. Oh, all right then.
If you look back at that time, that month's recording, do you think it was a good time?
Oh, it was fabulous. Yeah, really good.
We hebben al een tijdje op ze gewacht, maar ze zijn er eindelijk hoor. Paul McCartney en zijn Wings, with a little luck.
Special guests with their smash hit record, ladies and gentlemen, Wings.
World of Kintyre, oh, Miss Rolling in sea. My desire is always to be here, O Mull of Kintyre. Far have I traveled, and much have I seen. Dark distant mountains with valleys of green, past painted deserts, the sun sets on fire as he carries me home to the Mull of Kintyre. Mull of Kintyre, desire is always to be here, O Mull of Yeah.